So in 5, 4, 3.
Greetings, adventurer. Care for a story? One of new memories, of old haunts, and wait. Who are you? What are you doing in my house?
Yeah, if you're listening, this is yet another episode of the retro, what do we call this thing? The RPG Roundtable? I got too many podcasts, kid. The RPG Roundtable, this is a subsidiary of the RPG show, where we just get a group of misfits together, and we have a common subject where we just kind of kick around and go roundtable, as it were. Someone sounds terrible, like they're flying a plane right there. And we just go around the table and we talk to each individual person about whatever it is, you know, the subject. And in this episode's case, we're going to be talking about RPGs that are a little bit obscure, things that are kind of weird, maybe you haven't heard of before. Doesn't matter whether or not they're good. They're just, you know, some obscure RPGs. But before we do that, I want to do introductions, go around the table to everyone that's here this time. I guess to the proverbial right of me, we've got Tank joining us for the first time out of Georgia.
Hey, how y'all doing?
What's up, man? So, Georgia, I forgot to mention, I actually grew up in Georgia.
You did?
Yeah, St. Simon's Island. I don't know if you have any idea where that's at. It's a very small island, maybe an hour from Savannah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I know the area a little bit anyway. Closer to Florida than, I mean, it's in Georgia technically, but it's like right on the border. So, but yeah, I grew up there up through fifth grade before I moved to shitty Arkansas. but here I am. But I remember how it was. I miss it, man. One of these days I'm going to go back. Beautiful town, St. Simon's, just a little island town, very touristy. And next we have, I believe, our furthest person on this podcast ever, a continued guest, longtime friend of the show, Mr. James Wells out of Australia.
G'day, how's it cracking from down under? If that's my obligatory Australianness.
Right. And next to him, we've got out of Canada, Mr. Mike King, longtime friend of the show. He's a host of numerous podcasts. If you don't listen to The Graveyard Shift, you should be doing that. I'll give him a chance to plug that later on. But he's also in the past hosted things like Playing with Power, which was a, was it weekly? I believe it was a weekly show where they covered all the different issues of Nintendo Power, and I believe I was a guest on that at least once. Say hi, Mike.
How's it going, eh? I'm sorry, if we're playing the stereotypes, I just had to go with that.
Everyone's doing their stereotype? Well, I should be, like, having sex with my sister or something.
I just need to add some Foley work of a tree falling in the background.
Right.
We'll be all good.
Crack a cold one and all that. And another longtime friend of the show, Bill from England, the UK there, and he was also a longtime member of the Golden Years podcast, which changed into, I believe it's currently called the After Years podcast. And he is currently a member of the Trappings. I don't listen to it, so you're going to have to help me, Bill.
Yeah, I change around my podcasts a lot. So yes, I used to be the one of the main hosts of RPG The Golden Years, which then changed into the After Years, and I'm currently the editing producer of that show. And then I've started a new podcast, which is called Bill's JRPG Adventures and Other Trappings, which is a terrible, terrible long name.
I mean, I've been hosting Is It Worth It forever, and I wish I could go back in time and change that name.
I like that name.
Oh, cool.
Works for me.
Yeah, I've literally, you've all heard the story, I'm sure, but I submitted that. I recorded the first episode on a car ride over to work, you know, and submitted this garbage recording, which they ended up using as the first episode, and never thought in a million years they would have said yeah, and that's what led me down this whole podcasting trip, and it's been a really rewarding and awesome trip. But anyway, you've all heard me tell that story a million times. Sorry if I seem a bit out of it. I didn't get a whole lot of sleep, and I'm just kind of working off fumes. I'm sure you can all relate, especially you, James, getting up so damn early to be on the show. Normally, I'll go around and ask everybody what they're up to at the beginning of the show. I'll start with myself and just say, you know, I was playing up until recently The Last of Us, which is an amazing game, and we'll be covering that on the upcoming Is It Worth It, which I'll be recording with James in the next few days. And loved that, obviously. Just an incredible game. Haven't got to 2 yet. I'm told I'm going to be severely disappointed, unfortunately. Other than that, though, I did start and really been playing a lot of Slay the Spire, which is a game that was recommended to me some years ago, and it's an incredible game. It's really, really simple. If you play any sort of card games, Magic the Gathering or Pokemon, it's akin to that, except you don't like build a deck from the beginning. You do these runs to go through like a little mini story mode, and you've got different characters that you unlock that have different cards and abilities. And I don't know how to describe it without really getting into it. It could actually be a full episode, but really loving that game. And I've been playing an inordinate amount of Fall Guys with my kid, because it was like the free game last month or whatever, and he will not stop playing that. I don't really care for it myself. If any of you guys are playing it, I think Versnick said he's been playing it, or at least watching shows on it. It is.
My friend got me into it.
It's bad Mario Party.
I got bored with it, like, within the first, oh, here's 5 games, and wow, it's like handling a drunk shopping cart.
It's really hard to control. It is.
I have never tried it.
Yeah, it's not great. It's good for kids. I see why it's popular, especially since it does control pretty poorly. Like, your jump, your movement, everything is just, it feels bad. But you can, like, pick each other up and throw each other off the sides of things and you can really screw other people over. And basically every game you start out with 60 and you just like dwindle yourself down to one dude, and that dude wins a crown, and then you just replay it. Or if you lose, you can just go to the next game, get another 60 dudes and play all over again. The games are randomized, most of which are like you're just racing to the end goal, some of which you're doing things like trying to collect a bunch of eggs, just all kinds of, you know, matching games, just all kinds of basically Mario Party type games. But it doesn't control well. The music isn't particularly good. It doesn't look very pretty, but it's super fucking popular, so, you know, who am I to judge? So I've been playing a lot of that. Kid loves it.
You're really selling it there, Blaine.
I know, right? You definitely go out and play Fall Guys. It's not great, but, you know, if you're under the age of 8, you're going to love it. I guess I'll go in order next. Tank, what have you been up to, man?
Nothing much. You know, I'm on my 4 days off of work right now, so I just been, you know, when I have time, I've been playing Dark Souls.
Oh, man.
And it is like, it's been easy for me because I played a lot of Sekiro, but now I just went through a difficulty spike now, so it's getting real hard.
Yeah, that one is one, you know, I tried to play it like years and years ago, not when it came out, like a few years after, and I remember I got through the first boss, which is like you have to jump off of some ledge to do a downward thrust to like get half of his life off or something like that, and that was cool. And then I get to this next area and I just picked a fight with like the first dude I saw, and he beat me real bad. And then every time I would respawn, he was there and he would just like beat the shit out of me. And I finally had to jump off a cliff, and he jumped after me, and then he died, I guess. And I was, but then I looked it up. He gave some kind of quest or something. I was like, "What the hell?" You know, that dude's gone. Like, so I quit playing and never went back. I was like, games like that. Once I mess something up, I'm usually like, I get frustrated and I say I'm done. It's been one of those I've been meaning to go back to for like years. But yeah. So that's it? You just been playing a little bit of Dark Souls?
Yeah, Dark Souls, and then I've been playing also the first Witcher game.
The first one?
Yeah.
PC only?
You said what?
I said it's PC only, isn't it?
Yeah, it's only PC. I got it through Steam.
Oh, okay, cool.
So yeah, it's a good game. Like, I can see why. Like, I want to go through the whole series. Mm-hmm.
I hear that the first one's like real hard to go back to.
It is. It's because it's just you have to use the mouse and the keyboard.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they were just learning back then, so, but man, they got it right with Witcher 3. Played through that for the show here a while back, and man, I wish I'd have played it when it came out. That game is stellar. One of my all-time favorite games.
Okay, yeah, I love it. I'm invested to go through the whole series.
Right on. Yeah, I keep meaning to read the books, too, but I can't find time. Yeah. So, Mike, what have you been up to, man? Been a while.
It has been a while. Hard to get the Playing with Power podcast up and running. I just ran out of people that wanted to talk about the old magazines with me. I guess whatever people are playing with, it certainly isn't Power anymore.
Yeah, sure.
And kids today.
Well, you got like right up to the end, though. I mean, you were already like right before the N64, or right, the 64 had just come out when you guys... Right? Yeah.
Around issue 97 was when we started, when we ran out of, guests. When I ran out of hosts.
Yeah, because you and Sheldon.
I had a couple of issues, but everyone's just like busy with kids and family and, you know, trivial
life.
Shit like that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Who needs them?
But yeah, I am focused on the Graveyard Shift, which is a weekly horror podcast. The Playing of Power was monthly because it's all I could get my friends to do. Mm. But, you know, I managed to juggle between various people and get people to talk about horror movies. We also throw in like a little comedy skit, like a fake deleted scene or a production meeting,
mm-hmm.
or yeah. just us screwing around in the world of the movie. So, you know, it's a little bit of a creative writing exercise as well as a good way to discover and revisit old classical horror movies.
Yeah.
Some people have even thrown us curveballs, like doing a 1922 Swedish witchcraft documentary.
Yeah, I listened to that one. That was interesting. I had to actually go find that, and I watched portions of it anyway. It was really
pretty
weird.
Good, right?
For the era, it was pretty freaking incredible. I will give you that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm
a... The director shows up as the devil and tries to seduce a lady, and it's just him in, like, red makeup flicking his tongue.
Sure.
And he is the hero of the movie.
Yeah, and definitely give that a listen, and a lot of other shows. I guested on the Truth or Dare episode I guess it was only 2 years ago, one of my all-time favorite horror movies, and that was a lot of fun to do with you and Sheldon at the time. And yeah, check that out. They've recently done episodes on Dawn of the Dead, and they're in their Summer of Sand, I believe you're calling it, where you do movies based on yep. the beach or about the beach or deserts or whatever. Yep.
Sand-based horrors.
And
so we did Blood Beach.
Yeah.
The Sand.
Yeah.
We just recorded Sand Sharks with Brooke Hogan.
I didn't even know that
was a
thing.
Scion of the Hogan family.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, and I'm going to be, at some point in the nearish future, we're going to get together and do one over Tusk, which is a Kevin Smith horror movie that he put out a few years ago where a man gets turned into a walrus, which sounds really weird because it is really weird. And I think Johnny Depp is in that and some other, like, just big-name actors. I think maybe John Voight. It's been a while since I've seen it myself. I'll have to rewatch. But
that's gonna be the second horror where somebody slowly turns into what they're dressed as.
Oh yeah, it's a weird. Hailey Joel Osment, isn't it? Big fat Hailey Joel Osment as an adult. Weird movie. The one dude from Waiting. I can never remember his name. He was in Waiting and a bunch of other films.
Dane Cook.
Not Dane Cook. No, the main. Waiter guy that ends up getting another job offer from some other restaurant. He was also in, Dodgeball. He gets hit in the head with a wrench.
Justin Long?
Maybe. That seems right.
Yeah, that's Justin Long.
Yeah, he's in it. He plays the walrus. He gets turned into a damn walrus. It's a really weird movie, man. It is a very strange movie where I think it's John Voight. Like, he at some point got shipwrecked and only stayed alive because this walrus, like, thought it was one of its young. And over time, he fell in love with the walrus, but then got hungry, so killed and ate the walrus, and then felt guilty about it. So he's, like, killing people and trying to turn them into a walrus so they'll kill him. the really weird movie, man.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, so that sounds friggin' amazing.
It is off the wall, and it's every bit as goofy as I just described, and that's why I want to talk about that. And lastly,
I think off the walrus is going to be our title for that episode, because I can't think of anything better.
That's real good, man. And lastly, we got Bill all the way out of the UK, man. What have you been up to, dude?
Yeah, so I've just recently finished up Final Fantasy V for the After Years.
Yeah.
And then we started playing Wild Arms, which is hence why my picture on Discord is of Ruddy, or Rudy, whatever his name is. So we've been playing through that recently. I'm also playing Super Robot Wars, the old Game Boy version, for other trappings. And another game as well, which I finished up, called Monstania, which is one I wanted to talk about for today. But yeah, just like, you know, lots of podcasting, and because I'm kind of stuck, locked at home.
Yeah, no.
During the apocalypse, so.
Sure, yeah, no. Final Fantasy V is one of the most, in my opinion, underrated of the Final Fantasies. It's probably within my top at least three or four of the series. Absolutely love it.
I'm completely in agreement there.
Yeah, just incredible music. The storyline is obviously lacking. It would be the main thing, but the mechanics of that game, the customization and such that you can do, really cool. And like I said, the storyline, like, I've forgotten virtually everything except, like, they're trying to get...
It is one of the best movies where the bad guy is a tree.
I mean...
The best games.
Yeah. Games, yeah.
And the end boss looks like a giant penis tree as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to kill a giant penis tree to finish the game. And he's hard as nails as well.
Do you think that they were influenced by the Evil Dead?
Definitely.
It could be.
Definitely.
I remember it's one of those games where one of the main characters, like, up and dies, but then it very much like Beer Fest, if you've seen that film, someone else steps in and they're just like, yeah, and I've got all the same abilities and I'm the exact same level as
even old, worse than that, it's his granddaughter,
right? Galoof or whatever.
Galoof. That moment still gets me as well when Galoof dies, but yeah, then immediately Krillin turns up and just like, hey.
Yeah,
I'm a pee-pee-bessing girl, but I have all the strength of my super warrior grandfather.
Never made a lot of sense. That didn't make sense when they did it in Legend of Dragoon either. But, and I think they do it twice in that game, where they kill someone off and then just someone else steps in and just has all that.
At least
person's...
when Tella died, you didn't get another mage right away.
Right.
It's like Tella died and you don't have a mage.
Yeah.
Not until you get to the moon.
Yeah, Fusia. Yeah, Balm and Plum.
Yeah, then Fusia was like, I'm just like Tella. But better.
Better. Yeah.
I feel like Final Fantasy V explains it well, though, because it's kind of like the power of the crystals that Galoof was using
sure.
then go into his granddaughter.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like there is a reason,
a reason for
transferring
it.
His power. Yeah.
Galoof is a job that his granddaughter acquires.
More or less. Yep. Oh, man.
Yeah. To be the Warrior of Light. This is your new job.
But it is one of the most underrated Final Fantasies, and has some of the best music in the bridge music.
Battle on the Big Bridge. That is one of my favorite tracks of all time.
Really good stuff.
Absolutely love it.
And there's a lot of remixes of that you can look up. I might even, if I feel like doing my job and editing this properly, I might even put some of that right here. Probably not, though.
Well, I'd actually, because I've actually played, I originally played it back in like like late 90s, 2000s when I emulated it on my Windows 95 PC.
Oh my
and
god.
And so I played it a few more times more recently for the 4Job Fiesta, but I just downloaded like the mobile version onto my phone, absolutely loved it. And so this time around I was just like, right, I'm going to go back and play the fan translation, and oh my god, it's so much better than the thing that Square Enix put out.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. See,
the last time I played Final Fantasy V was like when what was that game? Anthologies?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
the PS1
last time.
Combo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where
and
I played.
I liked it.
I love it. Yeah, it's yeah, I mean, people cite like load times and stuff for those old anthologies, chronicles, and stuff like that. I don't remember any of that, but I haven't really gone back to any of them either. I assume they're bad. They're probably not nearly as bad as like the Sega CD stuff, which I do remember being bad when even when I was a kid. Like, you want to talk load times? Play some Who Shot Johnny Rock. Because when I put that in, I thought my copy was broken, and I was like, oh, I guess I'll go get something to eat or whatever, and I just left it sitting there. It just had a black screen, and it was like 5 minutes later, I heard some gunshots, and I ran upstairs, and the game was running. It had just started. You know, it took 5 minutes to load. I was like, okay.
Never... I mean, I grew up with a Spectrum in my house. So don't talk to me about load times.
Yeah, I mean...
I wasted so much of my childhood watching a fuzzy screen give me an epileptic fit.
Yeah, that's the Spectrum Holobyte, is that what that was?
No, I had the ZX Spectrum.
The ZX, okay.
Yeah, well, you had to put the tape in, and then you had to let the tape load.
Load, and yeah. You know, I've never played one of those.
And it made that horrible noise like the internet was starting up.
I've never played one. I only know about them through other podcasts based in the UK. And, yeah, we would call them the ZX Spectrum here, but ZX because UK.
Because I speak proper British.
Right. Aluminium and all that.
Well, shoe shine. I'm going to go clean some chimneys. Why,
Governor? Pip, pip, cheerio. Right. Yeah, I initially had a thought in my head because this particular cast was so diverse. I toyed with the idea of doing an accent for each one of you guys, and then I thought, you know what? There's probably something inherently wrong with that. I probably shouldn't mess. might be bad. I don't know. Plus, if Josh had done his job and shown up, he's out of Kentucky, and I mean... Kentucky accent. I don't even know what I'd do there. I guess I'd just continue on with my normal ass Arkansas accent. But anyway, as I said earlier, the main subject we were going to talk about on this episode was going to be obscure RPGs. These are just some RPGs. Normally I ask everyone to think of five. If you don't have five, I'm not really worried about it. We'll just go around until everyone's kind of exhausted, whatever they have in their head. And if you can think of additional ones to talk about before I get to you, that's great too. If not, don't worry about it, you know, and we'll just go around starting with me and talk about some just weird stuff that we played in the name of RPGs. I don't know about you guys, but growing up, if it had a guy with a sword on the front, I was renting it. You know, I was just like, oh, that might be an RPG, you know, because we didn't have, like, well, Mike can attest, we had Nintendo Power, and that was really the only outlet we had as to whether or not a game was going to be something we might like or not, and at the time we didn't know, but Nintendo Power basically said everything was good, because they were just a massive hype machine for their own console, and so to know what was good or what wasn't, you just had to rent everything. And I played a lot of trash growing up. One of which I wouldn't say is trash. I'll just start the podcast with it. And I'm kind of loathe to even say it's an RPG. I guess it kind of counts. There's a game called The Magic of Scheherazade. If for the NES, if you haven't heard of it, I'm not surprised. It's based off of, you know, the 40 Tales, Arabian Nights type stuff. Where Scheherazade, you know, tells all these stories to keep from dying. And every night she tells the 40 thieves a different story, and they decide not to kill her to listen to hear the cliffhangers or to the rest of the story the next night, so on and so forth. The game doesn't really have too much of a storyline. I want to say you play as Ali Baba, maybe, not really sure. It's kind of like a Zelda clone for the most part, but the one thing that really stood out for me as being really, really weird was, as opposed to like your normal systems where you would have a battery type of save, this particular game has a password system, and quite contrary to most password systems at the time where you would have to write down like a novel, they had the easiest passwords ever, in the form of, if you wanted to go to World 1, it was a W1 was the password. If you made it to World 2, you would get the password W2. World 3 was W3, and so forth. So very quickly, even as a kid, I realized like, oh, I could just, you know, like try W7 and maybe get to the end of this game, and you know, like, or whatever. And sure enough, like after a couple of tries, I found the end, and it was relatively trivial to beat it afterwards. But nonetheless, it's a very, very obscure, and I thought, you know, I'd mention it as just a starter for this show. Yeah, any of you guys play that one?
I've never heard of it.
I've actually got it on my list to play at some point. I just had to double check it was on there, but it is. So I will be playing it at some point, and I'm glad to know I can just skip to the end.
Yeah, it's very simple. I don't want to say it's bad, because it's NES good, you know. So it's like good for the NES, but it's definitely not one of the top 20 titles for the system or anything like that. And it's hard in the way that a lot of NES games were hard back in the day, because those that don't know, the reason we have the whole NES hard mentality is, when you know why games were so much harder back then, was because in Japan they didn't have rental systems. It was illegal to rent out video games for a very long time. And so when they made games that were coming over here, they were afraid, because we allowed renting, that we wouldn't buy the video games. We would just rent it, beat it, and then not have to shell out the $50 to get said game. So they made them infinitely harder, to where we would buy it, in theory, play it, not be able to beat it, and think, oh, maybe if I had more time, and then purchase the game. Whether or not it actually worked out to their benefit, I don't know. It did give us a lot of games that should be really easy, or at least playable. It made them almost unplayable, which, you know, some say is good and some say is bad. I'm kind of on the fence. I say some of the games probably needed to be a little harder, and some of them could have definitely benefited from being much easier. Anyway, first up on the list of one of his obscure games, we've got Out of Georgia Tank. What's something that you played that was real weird, maybe a little bit obscure?
I gotta say Xenogears.
Yeah, the OG for PS1?
Yes.
That's a good game.
I love this game. It's, every couple years, I always go back playing it, because the story's that good.
For sure.
And at one point, I had found out that it was actually pitched to be a Final Fantasy VII game.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes. And then people at Square was like, this isn't fantasy enough, and it turned into its own game.
Huh. That's wild. I had no idea. Yeah, because at that point, is that a Square game or an Enix game?
A Square game.
It was a Square. Okay. That's wild. Yeah, and then to say it wasn't fantasy enough, that's weird too, because Final Fantasy VII is all about, you know, robots and flying things, and you know, very much sci-fi, you know.
Yeah, it's Valid. Very much sci-fi.
Valid,
but
actually,
it's like,
mentions the game in,
yeah,
Final Fantasy VII.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, well, you know the bit where Cloud's in the wheelchair and he's basically talking incoherently.
Well, I don't guess I don't remember that. It's been a minute since I played the original Final Fantasy VII. I'll say
but
that.
But it's one of those things where you wouldn't notice it at all. It's just like he talks about, like, he actually obscure. It's one of those things that become more to light nowadays. Like, I didn't catch it when I was a kid, but I know about it in the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
But I know also in Xenogears, there's a portrait of Tifa on a wall.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, and then you got characters from Chrono Trigger in Xenogears.
See, I didn't notice any of this stuff. Wow, that's some neat trivia, though, for sure. Yeah, I love it when they do little bits like that, you know, and especially if you find it organically, because then it's like, it feels catered to you. You know, I can remember finding like the portraits in was it Mario RPG, where you see like all the, like the Zeldas and stuff like that, and finding what Samus like asleep in a bed or something like that. Just neat stuff like that, where they incorporate other games. I love that stuff, man. So that's real cool. But yeah, Xenogears, man, that was the first game I remember playing that had like combos, kind of like a fighting game would, where you would have to press.
Yes, I loved, like, that was my favorite aspect. And then they had to where if you built up enough AP, you could just do 3 or 4 combos and link them in.
Oh, for sure.
For tons of damage.
And then, you know, I know toward the end of the game, I had maxed everybody out to like level 99. And they introduce like this whole system where you can get in and out of mechs to fight these bigger battles, kind of a la Power Rangers almost. But you can get so powerful that you can fight those mechs as like a little teeny human versus this giant mech, you know. And you can I believe the move was Big Bang, where you just do like this super amount of damage. And
I remember that.
And yeah, it wasn't really designed to do that, but you could break the game and get so powerful that as a human you're sitting there fighting something that was you know, the size of a skyscraper. Just really cool. And the, again, the battle system, being able to input all the different commands like you do, it kept you engaged in a system that otherwise in a lot of turn-based games you're just like mashing a button to fight or whatever it is. And so yeah, really great game. And one that not enough people, I think, know about. A lot of people know about the Xenosaga games and stuff, especially with Xenoblade Chronicles and all that coming out and doing well. But a lot of people don't know the original, and that's something that, especially the younger listeners, if you haven't played, go back and play that. It holds up to this day. It is a really great game. Probably easily the best in the series, I would say. My favorite.
Oh, it's my favorite also.
Yeah, I think they kind of broke the mold. If they just stuck to that plan, I'd be a much bigger fan of the current.
Well, see, what I think it was it just got caught in the shadow of Final Fantasy, because Final Fantasy was
huge.
Was the big game for Square.
Yeah, it was definitely the Beatles, and then everything was copying them for a decade after.
Yeah, so I think it just got caught in its shadow.
Yeah, I think you're right, for sure. Yeah,
and they made one game, and then they struck fire, and it was like, okay, we found the winning formula. We need moody young men named after weather. stupid swords. Really stupid swords. If we could put pouches on the sword, the better.
It only got worse with Final Fantasy VIII. I'm well documented on talking about how much I hate gunblades and the idea of gunblades and how it would just wreck your wrist to even try and swing something like that. But
I can imagine the recoil could take off your arm.
Yeah, no,
I just love it.
Of course you do.
So, something like a handgun, but it needs a tripod to hold steady. That's friggin' great.
Oh yeah.
Well, you need the gun for if your sword runs out of ammo.
the lore of it is that there isn't actually any bullets. It just it's the vibrations from the shock of firing the gun that damages the enemies when you hit R1.
Now it sounds silly when you say it like that.
I know, but I think that's there's like, if you go deep into the Final Fantasy VIII menu, there's like a Final Fantasy XIII style data log, and there's loads of stuff in there, and that's one of the bits that's in there. It's just like the gun doesn't fire; it just vibrates slightly more when you trigger it.
So you're saying Squall Sword is like a mantis shrimp, where it doesn't really have to hit you; it just hits in front of you and just vibrates the air, creating a shockwave that stuns you.
It's more like hitting someone with a giant dildo and then hitting the vibrate function just as you hit.
I mean, insult to injury.
Cloud's not rocking up with a weapon at all, and it's not even Cloud.
Oh.
Sorry.
Like hitting someone with a vibrating dildo, man. I believe that's a killing offense right there. I'm pretty sure I would have to go to jail if someone hit me with something like that. There's no saving face. You know, somebody walks up and slaps you with a dildo, a vibrating dildo, that's it, it's on. Someone's going to jail.
You should watch a film called Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
I have seen that. It's been a minute. But yeah.
And then when Squall turns into Laguna, he hits you with the sexual assault rifle.
Why not? Oh, man. That's some funny shit right there.
Nice.
All right. Speaking of
dildos.
The man
with the dildo gun.
Up next.
At least you guys got Xeno Gears. I didn't actually get it. Didn't even get released.
Oh, that's right, Origin. That's right. We talked about Xeno Gears.
Yeah, we were on Xeno Gears. Yeah, back on topic. We'll go to the next guy in line is James Wells from Australia, and he's well known for picking some obscure quotations RPGs. So I'm kind of looking forward to what he has to say. What's up, James?
Well, not to disappoint you, but there won't be any Dragon's Crown on this list.
Oh, okay.
I know you're broken up, but no, I chose the first one because I'm like, it fits because it was obscured by its own brand, and that's Demon Souls, not Dark Souls, the OG Demon Souls.
All right,
the OG's probably Kingsfield, but that game came out, and it was, I think, in 2007, I believe it.
Was it that long
in
ago?
In Tokyo Game Show. They announced it for Tokyo in Japan, and apparently from what my Wikipedia research says, the review, or the feedback from it was, everyone thought it was crap. So they're like, oh, we're not localizing this. Then people, oh, this is selling. And this happened, that happened, they eventually localized it. But then Dark Souls came out, and everyone forgot about Demon Souls. And I legitimately think that the remake of it will sell more than the OG.
Think so.
So I'm like, it was essentially drowned by its own brand success.
Yeah, I mean, and that's something that does happen, again, with, like, Final Fantasy and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing. You get one in a series that just becomes super popular, and then it raises all ships in that years after the fact, people will go back to those other titles to check them out. But if they are concurrent at all, people just won't even look at the other one. They're all going towards the one, yeah. So,
well, look at The Witcher 3.
Yeah, for
sure. I'm pretty sure it dropped the prices of Witcher 1 and 2.
Yeah. But it also, at the same time, it also did give awareness to those two games, because before 3 was such a mega hit, 1 and 2 were well thought of in a very small community, but after 3 was so big, it did open up those doors to people wanting to look back at the earlier versions. Not me, because a lot of people came forward and said, hey man, don't bother playing the first and second one. The story is really, really good, but they're really hard to play. And so I was like, all right, well, I don't need that in my life. I've got way too many games to be diving into something that could be even mildly frustrating. Yeah.
It can be rough. You also forgot how my currently what going on with me was.
Did I forget what was going on with you?
You did.
Yeah, we don't need to hear from you. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't know how I did that.
We also forgot what game I was playing, but...
No, you're coming... Oh, did we forget? Oh, all right, well, let's give... I'm so sorry. I'm bad at this. I told you I was tired. I told you. So, James, let's hear what you've been playing or what you've been up to, and then Mike, when we go to you next, you can open up with what you've been playing and then give us a game. How's that, bud?
Sure thing.
I think it's even worse that I left that sit there just to mess with you a little.
I would have never noticed.
Yeah. No, I've been playing Other Side. It's a...
song by the Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Also that, but this is a misspelt version, so now it's a video game.
Oh, okay.
And it's one of those ultra-brutal, roguelike-looking things, and it's... you have three characters, or up to three characters, up to four later on, but... it's grid-based, turn-based combat, sort of.
Sort of?
It's just brutally hard, and it has a nice noir art style where black, white, and red are essentially the highlighted colors, especially red.
Okay.
I just think it's neat.
A little bit like Mad World, then, where it's like black and white, and then the reds stand out all the more because of
I'd
that.
I'd actually go more Sin City, because Mad World was more cartoony.
Well, sure, but yeah, that's another fine example, Sin City.
Yeah.
Good movie. Whatever that sequel was not nearly as good. Yeah, cool. Well, I'm sorry I skipped you, bud. I, like I said, out of it. Mike, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you're up to, and then give us an obscure game to riff on.
Okay, game that I've only got to play recently because it was, I think last year it was a Black Friday sale, so I finally got the gold edition of Dragon Age Inquisition. So I finally got around to playing that. I'm enjoying it. I'm playing the noble but good, in other words, boring, first run, so I could absorb the story, and then next time I play it, I'm going to be like some sassy dwarf.
It is.
Into sassy dwarfs, are we, Versnick?
I love evil dwarfs.
Evil, yeah.
No, I just want to like yell at somebody and be like, "Hey, come down here and say that to my face."
Sure.
Awesome.
I always have to play through as good on those type of games, at least at first. I don't know. And then I do tend to feel bad about doing like truly evil things, so I never can play like truly evil. I can't kill like a bunch of kids or something. It just don't sit right, you know, even in a game.
I'll go for Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah, if I was the chosen one, I would have been very much not Anakin. It'd have been a very boring story where I just was like, "Yep, I'm the hero and never strayed." So yeah,
you got the morality wheel. Go to Obi-Wan and tell him that the Emperor is the bad guy, or pay the younglings one final visit. Decisions.
Exactly. Yeah. It like I said, it would have made a very boring film. I'm just too nice a guy, I guess.
They just retconned it in that they saved over your Zelda data.
Yeah, it stole some of my favorite games or something. That or hit me in the face with a vibrating dildo. You can go there. You got an obscure game for us, Mike?
I do. I enjoyed a game which I had a rental service for a while, and there was one game in the catalog, and I was just like, this looks absolutely dumb and stupid. I got to give it a shot. And it's called Akiba's Trip, Undead and Undressed.
I know that,
That's legit on my list.
So you play a guy who has been surgically altered to become something akin to a vampire, where you feed off people's energy and you are allergic to sunlight.
Yep.
So your weakness and the weakness of your enemies is stripping off their clothing and exposing them to sunlight.
Yeah, it's a weird-ass game. I tried to play
it. The music on it is friggin' tight. I managed to queue up one of my favorite shop music, if I can have your attention for just like 30 seconds.
Okay.
I don't have to play the whole thing even though, but it's something.
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, that's shop music.
Yeah, it's wild.
Not a kick-ass fight scene or a sex scene based on the music. No, this is like a tech store. You go in to buy some CDs and shit, or some computer programs or whatever, and there's this vulgar hip-hop playing.
Yeah.
And it's only one track. The rest is like happy J-pop. And out of nowhere, they're just like, what happened to that vulgar banger that we had in the music library? Oh, yeah, let's just load that in as shop music number 5.
I mean, why not? I mean, the rest of the game is so weird anyway. I found that at a GameStop on like marked off 3x clearance type of thing. And I read the back and was like, this isn't real. And bought it.
I'm dreaming.
And bought it and brought it home for like under $4, I want to say. It was nothing. And played it maybe an hour and was like, this game is not good. It's weird. It's really, really, really weird. The whole rip off people's clothes. Now, they don't get fully on naked, unfortunately, so don't be thinking that. But you can get them down to their skivvies.
You only have to strip them down to their undies.
Yeah, and then they die. And they're trying to do the same to you, if I remember right.
Yeah, they disappear or like burn away, and so do you.
Yeah, it is It is something else. I don't know who thinks of this crap. I mean, obviously Japan. The short answer is Japan. Yeah. They're the ones that are these weird pervy dudes thinking of this stuff. You know, they're the same people.
Just to reiterate, it's just, there's one, you can actually learn the drunken monkey in the game too.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Yeah, you can, among the things that you can choose besides what you wear and the weapons that you can use, like teddy bears, keytars, a whole bunch of things, excuse me.
Jesus.
You can also choose your walking style. So you can walk like Bender when they're like, Bender, you're great, baby. And he's like, shut up, I know it. Except you can do that your entire walking cycle as you walk around town strutting.
A masterpiece.
It truly is.
Have you played through it, Versnick?
Yeah, it was legitimately on my list as well.
Oh, yeah. You got any additional things to say about it? Sounds like exactly the type of game you'd be into.
Well, there's a sequel, not as good as the original.
Not as so.
And it's an anime.
And it's not as good as the original. Maybe I ought to give it another chance. I could not get into it when I tried to play it. Maybe I just had the mentality that it was gonna be bad because I did pick it up so cheap. But I gave it maybe an hour and was like, yeah, this is just the weirdest thing I think I've played in a minute.
Yeah, I think the one I'm playing,
what system is it on?
Is the sequel.
It's on a PS4. I know that because that's where I've got it. I think it's on other systems too, though.
It's on the Vita.
PS3, the Vita, Steam.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's just everywhere. It's a modern game. Just a really weird game, man. It's one of those. It's like Mr. Mosquito or something where you're like, this isn't a thing that exists, but it does, you know. And short answer, Japan. That's why it exists. And of course, you would like it, Versnick. You would the Dragon's Crown and everything. I mean, it's right up your alley.
I legitimately had to crop my list because I'm like, I could just name a bunch of obscure JRPGs that I have.
Oh, you might be naming them all.
That felt like cheating.
Oh no, it's fine. No, there are no rules to this show other than, you know, don't. Racial slurs and, you know, things of that nature. There are no rules. But yeah.
But it's for the sport of it.
Anyway, yeah, that's a good pick, Mike. You know, I didn't even think of that from my own list, and that's one I've played within the last year. So, very, very weird. Very weird title. Bill, you got something weird over there in the UK that maybe we didn't get here?
I don't know about over in the UK. I think I'll start with Final Lap Twin.
Never heard of that in my life. Guys,
you know, haven't heard of it?
No.
Haven't heard of it.
It's a racing RPG for the TurboGrafx-16. It is pure bonkers.
A racing RPG.
A racing RPG. Now, I don't know if you remember what the old like vector graphics racing games used to be like.
Yeah, where you used
to just have like a 2D screen.
For
and
sure.
And it was just like left, right, left, right. You know, there was like the we used to have like the Ayrton Senna MotoGP ones over here. It was just that, but it had an overworld map. The random encounters would throw you into a racing game, and it was the annoying thing was as well. Every single battle was split screen, so you could see your enemy, but then obviously that would take up half the screen. So you're just looking at the tiny top half of the screen for your car. And yeah, it was just bonkers. You just had to go out and become the world champion, basically.
And this was on the TurboGrafx-16, huh?
On the TurboGrafx-16, yeah. It was part of the Golden Years podcast. There's just an enormous list of games to play, and it was like the second one we played.
Wild.
Because we're trying to play them through in date order, and it was just like, oh my God, what the hell are we doing?
No doubt. Yeah, definitely go and listen to that episode, and I'm going to have to go back and listen to that myself. That sounds completely wild, and that's one of the things, you know, I pride myself on knowing a lot about older video games, but the TurboGrafx is one of those systems that didn't do real well over here. Was that a big system over there?
No. I think the TurboGrafx, because I think it was called like the PC-900 or something
in
Japan, and it was very well, it was did very, very well in Japan, but it just failed miserably over in the Western markets. But there were some games out there. I mean, it is quite fun, if I'm honest with you, until you get to the end boss. And this has kind of become like a big trope on our podcast, that Alan Prose, the end boss of Final Lap Twin, is the hardest JRPG boss in existence.
And his name is just...
Because for some reason, they just programmed his AI to be perfect.
And his name is Alan.
Alan Prose. I think it's supposed to be some sort of reference to a real racing driver.
Oh, okay.
But it was just lost on me.
So they went with Alan Prose and not Dick Trickle. I'm disappointed.
There was someone called Fat Pat in it. I'll say that. But yeah, it was just crazy. It took me probably about 6-7 hours to get to the end boss. And then I think I probably put about 8 to 10 hours trying to beat him.
Nice.
It was just insane.
Yeah, I've never even heard of it. The only RPGs I know of at all from the TurboGrafx are the Working Designs RPGs. I believe they brought over YS 1 and 2. Or Ease,
yep.
I think the Ease, yeah, is how. I always throughout my childhood, I called it YS, because, I mean, that's what's on there. YS doesn't make an actual word in my mind, even though, and sometimes Y is literally part of the vowels, it still doesn't look like it should be an actual word. But everyone says it's Ease, so I'll go with that, even though that's spelled E-A-S-E.
Yeah, it's a bit like geese, isn't it? You've got to go Ease. I have been corrected on it so many times, Blank.
Yeah, and I could care less. So I just call it. I'm going to call it YS until the day I die. And if you don't know what I mean, I'm sorry for you.
No, yeah, because I reviewed book 1 and 2 for the TurboGrafx as well for the podcast, and yeah, amazing, amazing game.
But, for sure.
But yeah, incredible, especially on the TurboGrafx. So nice.
I tried playing. What was it, YS or Yeast or something?
YS, yeah. I believe it's called YS.
Yeah, YS. Wow, that's weird.
Yeah, no, I just played 1 and 2 on PlayStation Vita.
Oh, yeah?
The controls really just does not hold up.
Well, I mean, the game's like 30 years old, you know?
Yeah, the Vita version as well is a port of a port of a port.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can... get them on the Wii, or you could get them on the Wii up until their eShop, and I believe that was like the best version that ever made it over here.
It's on iOS now, actually. I think that version's pretty solid.
Is it? Okay.
Music is great as well. It's proper like heavy metal orchestra.
Great stuff.
Just jacked it up to 11.
Really, the Yeast system...
I tried playing Yeast 3 on the
Super Nintendo?
On the computer, and... Oh. What?
It's on the Super Nintendo as well.
I tried playing Wise 3 on the I think it's a relatively new one called like the Lacrimosa of Dana or something. I tried playing that, and immediately it all just got laggy and stuff, and I realized maybe my 9-year-old computer might not be up to snuff anymore.
Is there another Ease 3 that I'm mixing up or something? Because the Ease 3 I have in mind could be run on a pocket calculator.
Because the original Ease 3 is like the side-scrolling one. It's
yes.
Like the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, it's
so
not great.
It's been remade as a normal Yeast game, and they I think it's called Ofin Feluga or something, or Feluga.
I see.
And it's considered actually to be one of the best ones out there.
Oh, okay.
It is like a complete remake of the game.
Yeah,
they took away all the hard-ass side-scrolling shit.
I've played a lot.
I just looked it up and realized why I goofed. I forgot that there was like a V in front of the 3. So it's actually 8 that I was trying to play.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense, too. Yeah, it's the only, 3 was the only one that made it over on any Nintendo system that I'm aware of for a long time, up until, the DS or something like that. And
Pretty sure it's the worst version as well.
It was my introduction to the series, and I would read all these forums and stuff as a kid about how good that series was, and I was like, no, it's just not. I spent a lot of time on Ease 3 for the Super Nintendo, and not a great game, but it does segue into one of mine that plays a lot like it, but good, and it's another side-scrolling RPG for the... Sorry, there's a bug that was crawling on my mic. It's called Exile for the Sega Genesis, and it plays a lot like Ease 3. It has been a long time since I've played it, but it's very rudimentary. I believe it was on some other systems as well. I want to say it was on the TurboGrafx 16. I'm not positive of that, but I think it is one of the ones that was on there as well. But you've got these big anime portraits, which was something that was relatively new at the time. You saw it in games like Shining Force and Shining Force 2, but it was still new at the time, had a really rudimentary story, but the gameplay is really where it's shown. It was an action RPG, and most of the items and weapons that you would get were like rare drops off of enemies and such. And I don't remember a whole hell of a lot about it because I haven't played it in forever, but I do remember I started playing it as like a lark, where I was like, oh, well, I'll get this for $2 and, you know, give it 3 or 4 minutes, because on the back of the box it looked exactly like Ys 3, and I was thinking it was going to be equally as terrible. And it ended up being really fun, and I ended up playing it to completion, and I remember it didn't take too long, just a few hours. I don't know what it's worth or anything like that. I think it's relatively cheap for the Genesis. I don't know if it's available elsewhere. But I would recommend it if you can find it under, you know, $20 or something like that. Or especially if you're looking for RPGs for the Genesis, because there's not a whole hell of a lot of them. There's probably less than 20. That's, you know, a lot of people don't even know that they have that many on that system. They've got quite a few that are technically RPGs, I'll just put it that way, that aren't, you should never ever play. But Exile is actually one where, you know, if you if that's all you got, or if you just really want to delve into that library, I'd recommend checking it out. Any of you guys play that one? No?
No, I haven't played
that. I have.
Again, it's on. You're right, though. It is on the TurboGrafx.
Hey!
Because I think there's only 6 games on the TurboGrafx that are actually considered RPGs. So.
Right. Look at me.
I played almost 3/4 of them.
Yeah, I did zero research, so yay for knowledge that literally has no value outside of like this podcast, but whatever. And we'll swing back around if you got another one, Tank. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, it's not an RPG.
That's all right.
But it's very obscure, but it's called Galgun.
Oh, I know that one.
And this one is more, it's a rail shooter.
Okay.
And it has the most weirdest story. It came out of Japan, of course, but I mean, the story is you're just a guy that got shot by Cupid's arrow. And now all the girls in your school want you, and you're equipped with a pheromone gun to hold them at bay. And you have to shoot the girls with a pheromone gun.
What?
It's weird, but I mean,
it got a sequel.
Oh my god, this, everything involved in that, like, you'd have to know a chemist and be like, listen, all these girls are on me, and for some reason it's a problem.
Yeah, and I was gonna
say, and I need you to help me fix it.
This sounds...
isn't the pheromone gun from Cupid? Cupid's magical pheromone gun?
Yeah.
Okay, so he doesn't have to tell anybody. Cupid's just like, listen, I goofed. These girls are gonna be all up on your jock, and you need to, and here's how you stop that.
Nice.
Because also, I imagine somehow you'd want to stop it at least after the first hour.
Maybe do
also
it
as... Cupid's a cute anime girl as well.
Ah.
Of course.
Well, I'm just going to say, if this happened to Blaine J, first order of business, I'd be, oh, thank you very much, Cupid. Yes, I will be using this. As soon as Cupid left, that would go right in the dumpster. And. I would
shoot
just
myself and see what happens.
Live my weirdest fantasies for a minute, and hopefully the wife would understand and be like, baby, it was a once in a lifetime type of situation. I'll give you a free out as well. No, that sounds very weird, man. I've never heard of that. It sounds obviously a Japan made game. I really do not understand them or their culture sometimes.
And I've played the first Galgun when it was still in Japan, but like the other games, I cannot see how they made it out to America.
They made it here.
Yes.
Oh yes.
I've never heard of it.
I'm pretty sure they have an R rating in Australia.
Well, Australia though.
Oh yeah.
You guys, for the longest time, I mean, I know it's recently lifted a little bit, but you would change and alter almost every game that had anything remotely PG-13 about it, you know. I really feel for you guys.
The two big ones that they just straight up went, you can't have this in the country, was anything sexually provocative or drugs related.
Yeah.
So, like,
everything.
Your Fallout, they had to change things to, like, instead of speed, to jet.
Yeah.
As I wonder, what country was it that the whole thing about Manhunt?
Australia.
Okay.
I was going to say, yeah, it's got to be Australia, because you guys, I would have never guessed until I heard that about you somewhere some years ago, was, you know, are so strict with, you know, what comes in your country as far as media is concerned. It was like, wait a minute, but why? You know, are you guys still in the 1950s?
I mean, Convict Island didn't really need any censorship there, but...
That's my thought. Yeah.
But they have given us an R rating now, because that was the problem. We didn't have an R rating, so anything would just be denied classification. Ah. Now we have one. They still deny things classification, but now we can just order things off eBay, so negates the problem.
Yeah. Negates it quite a bit.
So you guys must have never got any Hideo Kojima game ever.
No, we did.
Just like, did you guys get well, you might not know, I was going to ask if you got Snatcher, because it does have a lot of bloody sequences throughout that game and such that I would think of that era would have been
I know, it wasn't violence, you could have ultra violence,
it was just drug use. Well, there was drug use
and
too.
Sexual content.
Yeah, and sexual content. Yeah, that, in fact, that whole game, as much as I love it, it's my all-time favorite game. But, man, the main character in that game, you can be such a skeez and perv to everybody. Very weird, very weird game.
You also have the version of Max Payne.
Yeah.
It's just upside down. But you also have to realize the people that make these laws are, they probably don't know how a computer turns on. They have a secretary for that, so if it's not mainstream, they don't know about it. Yeah. So anything that's not in the news, they're like, what's that video game?
I mean, we get that here too. What was it, Joe Lieberman back in the 90s, his whole stink over Night Trap, and I mean, going...
I remember that.
And it was like,
he hired people to make a game about where you kill, like, video game developers.
And if you play,
and he wouldn't even pay.
If you play Night Trap, you know, starring the late great Dana Plato, it is probably less scary than your average episode of Different Strokes, what she's known for. Have you ever seen the episode of Different Strokes where Arnold, the main character, almost gets raped by a bicycle salesman? That's a real episode. Look that shit up. It's on YouTube. That shit is terrifying. Like, there's a whole...
Wasn't she in the porn called Different Strokes?
It wasn't a porn. She was. But yeah, she was. What? It was a Skinamax. It might almost porn. Yeah, I mean, she was very, very naked in it.
Oh, that's just softcore porn.
Yeah, it was, and she was in another one called The Legend of Jack and Jill or something like that, or When Jack Met Jill. I don't know, but yeah, she had a very tragic, unfortunate life, and died relatively young. I want to say before 40. I think the only person left from that show living is Todd Bridges. So if he and the cast of the Golden Girls got together, it'd just be him and Betty White. Sorry.
Betty White.
Yeah, it's a bad joke. Anyway, but yeah, it was a whole thing, man, where they was just basically old people hearing something stupid and running with it and had no idea what they were even rallying against. And it was just
you've
this
just
like
described
Australia
politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was such a joke.
Politics of the world.
Now, they also lumped in Mortal Kombat at the time was another one, but like the one at the forefront was definitely Night Trap. And
Mortal Kombat inspired the ESRB.
Yeah. And you know, rightfully so, it needed to be done, but when you go back and you look at how cheesy Mortal Kombat looks, you know, and it's like, oh, this guy's ripping his head off with the spine still attached and stuff, but I mean, it's all cartoony, and I mean, none of it looks particularly real. At the time, we all lost our collective minds, but...
Well, it was unprecedented, wasn't it?
Right, yeah. We hadn't seen stuff like that. Before then, video games were really, really cartoony, and...
you know, went from Mario to ripping people's skulls off.
Yeah, it'd be like if you were watching an episode of Mickey Mouse and, you know, he pulled his dick out or something. You'd be like, whoa, you know, what's Mickey doing here, you know? But it was equivalent. I remember it was very shocking at the time, but to throw Night Trap in there and have that as the forefront was just hilarious.
Oh, come on, Pluto, here's the peanut butter. Oh, boy!
The biggest joke is that they get on these high horses going, oh, we can't let these in for moral integrity. They did that with the South Park. And there's the infamous koala scene where they've just taken part of the game out. Then when the Fractured Butthole was released, they released the Stick of Truth, and they just went, yeah, we're not censoring it again, and politics or the politicians went, yeah, whatever, it's fine. It's like, what?
They gave up.
Yeah, they straight up did. It was like,
okay. Skip up with South Park. We can't censor Trey and Matt Parker.
basically, be left with you'd be left without any content. So, oh man, good pick. Are we on mic?
I guess.
Yeah, I think
I didn't really.
What's that?
Wait, who just went?
I thought you did.
No, it was Acubus trip, wasn't it?
That was a while ago.
That was a while. Yeah,
wasn't it just Galgun?
We just did Galgun. Yeah. So okay, so it is James then. My apologies. Yeah,
he's trying to skip me again.
I just don't like you.
Well, I'm going to normalize this. I'm going to normalize this a little because you've opened the floodgates, and I'm going to just shut them a little. And my obscure game is Death Stranding. Not a new, not an old game. I think it actually sold really well, but it's just very obscure in its gameplay. It's like it's a walking simulator that is a balancing simulator that is an RPG that has blood-based grenade combat.
And you play as Daryl Dixon.
It has and a you great
carry
world.
And you carry a baby in a gas tank.
If you don't tell me that gameplay is obscure behind that description, no, I would love to see an example.
And don't forget, you're a glorified mailman.
Yeah, it's a mailman simulator.
Mailman simulator with a baby in a gas tank. And I've seen gameplay footage where like you're balancing shit like to the moon, and it looks real weird, man. That's why I haven't delved in. I love Kojima; he makes amazing stuff, but that seemed a bit much. I'm waiting for that to go down to like $2 or $3 before I pick up a copy.
I'm with you on that because it's like I can't get with the, you know, I want to play games to have fun, like not balance and then one slip and everything that you're carrying goes all the way. I was like, that's too much.
Yeah, I thought...
Well, I gave up.
Yeah.
With the carrying the package and just loaded up on grenades to go fight all the monsters.
Right. I know Cujo platted that. Wish he was here to say something about it because that seems maddening, man. I've watched all these videos of people, like you say, balancing this stuff and then they, I don't know if they trip over a rock or just hit the controller too hard, but all of a sudden they like drop everything and it goes off in a river or something. I was like, what is this? I don't want to play that at all.
I'm pretty sure you can even control it with the gyros in the controller. So if you lean too far one way.
No.
And see, and the bad thing about it is like when it, before it came out, I wanted to get it.
Me too.
I wanted to get it so bad, and I just couldn't.
Yeah, Cujo got so... He got the version that...
So like, this game is like an egg race.
Have you played it, Mike?
No, I'm just going off what you guys are saying. Like, all I saw was a guy carrying, like... basically, like, they're mailing babies, so this is like the Wayfair scandal, but if it was real.
For sure.
You got it mixed up. You keep the babies, you mail the packages, because the babies detect the monsters. Obviously.
I mean, when you put it like that, it makes perfect sense.
No, but well, now I'm going to go get it now. Man.
And this is classic. This is what happens when you let them have too much creative power.
Yeah. <there's>...
Well, the world building and the story is excellent. It's all done damn near perfectly. And I'm like, it is worth it even just for the watching the overlong movie.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you get your money's worth, but it's like, I would never play that game on hard mode.
Yeah.
So the baby detects the monsters. Is it like Baby Mario where they're like...
I hope not.
Yeah, it does cry and you have to like hush it and stuff in its little capsule, but it plugs into you and you've got a little antenna.
But it's
on
in water. Wouldn't it gargle?
I don't know. Shake it hard enough. I don't know how babies in water work.
Not like that.
Well, if you shake it too hard, it actually gets more upset.
Well, yeah, that's what happens.
You mean you don't get little flakes coming down like a little snow globe?
I mean, that's a thing, you know. When you shake a baby, they grow up retarded, you know. not to use a terrible word, but that's what happens. I used to work in human development, and there was so many shaking child syndrome, where like a mother would shake the baby while it was still in development, and the brain would rattle against the inside of the skull, and then it grows up and, you know, never has a...
coloring books forever.
Yeah. It's a terrible, terrible thing. That's why you
need to finish the job so they don't grow up.
Oh, come on. Terrible.
That was terrible, but it got pretty dark pretty fast.
No,
a penny, in for a pound.
Right. It's a weird thing, and as I was trying to say earlier, Cujo ordered like the $200 edition, like pre-ordered it, and he got this package on Discord. I don't know if any of you were there at the time. He was posting pictures. He's like, what the hell is this? And he opens it up. It's like this giant suitcase, and it's got that damn, like a baby inside of like some jelly or something in a big capsule, and it's the size of a real baby. And it had that as like, I guess, to put up on your wall or I don't know, like a statue type of thing. Just now, like, why? And he's like, oh man, he's got more money than he knows what to do with, I guess. I mean,
I think that'd be a better deal, because I seen the Cyberpunk pre-order for like $1,600, and it's just two figures. You don't even get the game. Like, give me the jelly baby any day.
I want to play Cyberpunk more than just about anything that's going to be coming out next year, but I don't need to be doing that. Cyberpunk and Illudin Chronicles, I definitely, I backed the heck out of that. I couldn't, you know, even though I didn't really have the money to spare, I had to spend a little extra and get the Steelbook version.
That's been blowing up on the Discord.
Oh, man, yeah. Nick, he spent $700 towards Illudin Chronicles. Just unreal, you know. But
my wife would divorce me.
Yeah, Suikoden's like his favorite system, or not system, but a game ever. Just about, it's right up there in his like top two or three. So he lost his fucking mind, as we all did. I mean, I think everyone that's played it is a huge Suikoden fan. But man, I had to get it, and it's looking amazing. I can't wait for it to come out. Of course, we're going to be waiting a while on that one, but.
Hope
yeah.
It's worth every penny.
I'm sure it is. I personally only spent $80. But yeah, there are some people out there that spent thousands, because you could, like, I think it was for $1,000, you would be like a minor character in the game. You could pay an additional, I forget how much it was now, you could pay additional and be thanked at the end of the game by name or something. I didn't splurge for any of that crap. It's all really neat, you know, when they put that stuff in, and you know, you're kind of forever part of something, I guess you would feel like. So that would be neat, but I just don't have the extra funds to be able to do that. I just want to play the fucking game. But anyway, yeah, good pick, James. Death Stranding, still one I want to play, despite everything. He made Snatcher, you know. I'm always going to play everything the man makes, even though he gets weirder and weirder the older he gets. Mike, I guess you're finally up. You got another one?
Well, I didn't have too many in the tank, but one that... I guess it was relatively obscure due to, you know, the amount of sales and the lack of sequels and stuff, is the Secret of Evermore.
It is a weird one, and I'll tell you why, is that's a U.S. exclusive, at least initially. That came out here in Japan.
Yeah, so it technically is not a JRPG, because it was designed and developed in North America.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know if it even made it out to Australia, so... Or the U.K. I have no idea.
I don't know about the European releases, but I know when I played it, I just thought, like, oh, it's made by the same people that did Secret of Mana. It's got, like, pop culture references, like Earthbound, but to its own culture.
Yeah.
So the guy would be like, oh, wow, this monster is just like the Jell-O monster from Tales from the Cupboard. And, like, referencing, I would just love to see the movies that existed in this guy's world.
Yeah.
Because he is a movie geek. And him and his dog are traveling to all these different biomes. You don't know if they're like different time periods or different bordered worlds or whatever. But every time him and the dog gets transported, the dog gets altered to suit the environment. Mm-hmm. So in prehistoric times, he's a cave dog. And in Egyptian times, he's like a jackal.
Yeah,
and then
robot
in the future,
dog.
He's basically... Yeah, in the future, he's a toaster.
Yeah.
Hey.
So that's fun, and you get to create alchemical potions. Like, this is living off the land shit. You just find stuff, put it together, and that's like your quote magic.
Exactly.
Or your alchemy. It is fantastic. The visuals are great. You find end up finding like amazing massive monsters. It's like Secret of Mana, Earthbound, and Ed Wood had an orgy, and this was the product.
It's a beautiful game. I do have some things I didn't like about it. First and foremost was the second player couldn't play as the dog, unlike Secret of Mana, where you could have three players playing all the different characters. Evermore, it was just a one-player game, despite having a second character.
That's why we need a remaster done.
Yeah.
Money, you did Final Fantasy VII. It did okay. Now when are we going to get Final Fantasy VI remastered? I mean, we had Final Fantasy IV redone.
We had six remastered for the, was it the 3DS or the DS?
The iPad?
It was completely remastered in 3D, or maybe I'm thinking of Final Fantasy IV.
No, you're thinking of Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah, maybe.
And I remember that one, which I got for the 3DS.
Yeah.
And or the DS, whichever. And I remember it immediately had a problem when it started, when it introduced Cecil on the airship, and it says, like, Cecil Baron, load captain of the Red Wings.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you really can't even put down Lord. All right, you tripped out of the gate, but let's see how you do.
Yeah, and speaking of Cecil, he is in Secret of Evermore as a cameo. He sells you the bazooka, what? I believe. Yeah, you don't remember that one? Hello?
Hello?
Bueller? Mike ducked out.
What? No, I just got a Skype call from a total stranger, so I'm like, nope, fuck this.
Yeah, no, you do remember, though. Yeah, Cecil's in Secret of Evermore. He owns a shop now and references Rosa. When you walk in, it's playing the music, and you see the crystal sword and the Excalibur on a table. And I believe he sells you the bazooka, if I remember right. Or gives it to you.
It's an expensive... Yeah, there's an expensive weapon, though. Like, a medieval bazooka seems a little out of place. I'd expect that to be more in the future, but...
Hey, man.
Whatever.
When you can't explain it just say magic.
Yeah.
Yep. Great game, though. Yeah, this one that I went back and played maybe 15 years ago and got two-thirds of the way through and just couldn't, like, force myself to play through the rest of it. Still really stellar and relatively cheap for being a title that is, you know, only here in the States. It may have gone up since last time I checked, but... really, really great game. If you haven't heard of it or haven't played it, definitely check it out. I believe the only way you can play it is on the original Nintendo or, emulation, which I wouldn't fault you for doing for any of these or any game in general. You know, just play them however you can play them at this point. That seemed like there was something else I was going to say about Secret of Evermore, but I've completely forgotten. Great game, though. Good pick. And we're back around to Bill. Do you have another one, Bill?
So, what did I do last time? Final Lap Twin? What do I want to go for? I'm going to go for Monstania. Or Monstania. I'm still not really sure on how to pronounce it.
Okay.
So, this is a strategy RPG for the SNES.
I don't think it came over here, so tell me about it.
Nope, it was a Japan only release.
I see.
So just as a reference, JRPG Trappings, my podcast, I'm playing fan translated games.
Gotcha.
You know, hence why I played the Final Fantasy V one recently and stuff. But yeah, I was actually surprised. It's a really short game. It was only like 6 hours long. But it was really, it's kind of like in the style of Final Fantasy Tactics, all set on like a 3D isometric world. But it was interesting because it was very different sort of any other strategy game I played, because you only had two characters that you played as, and then there was like up to about 18 monsters that could be on the screen at any one time. And every time you move one tile, all the monsters move one tile.
So
it all kind of happens at once, and it flows really nicely.
Huh, yeah, that reminds me of Mystic Quest, I think, does that. Every time you move, they move. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, it was really, really fluid, but it was just I was really impressed with it. It was like a really fun little game to play, and yeah, it didn't take me too long either. So it was a nice short one. But yeah, I'd never heard of it up until about a month ago. When you said obscure RPGs, I was like, yeah.
No, for sure. Yeah, I definitely have never heard of it. Yeah, that's the thing.
But yeah, it's a good one.
You think you've heard of everything, and then someone's like, hey, have you heard of this? And you're like, what? Yeah, it's,
you know. Yeah, like I say, the graphics are almost like on par with Final Fantasy Tactics.
Okay.
Even though it was like a console generation earlier. And the music was by, I'm not going to try and pronounce the guy's name, it was the same guy who did Luna and Grandia.
Lunar and Grandia, or? Did you say Lunar?
I think, yeah, Lunar and Grandia.
Oh, okay. I was like, I've never heard of Luna. Tell me about that. yeah, he.
Sorry, my British accent.
No, you're fine. No, did a great job. Lunar is some of my absolute favorite music ever, as is Grandia. So, wow. What was the name of that one again?
Monstania. Monstania.
Okay. And there's a fan translation out there for that. Okay, cool.
Oh, yes.
That goes on my infinite list of things that I'll never actually get to, but say I will.
It's really short, man. Like, you could easily plow for it.
Really? Like, how short are we talking? Yeah. 6 hours,
like
8 hours?
Four to five hours.
Really? Okay. That yeah.
If you die, then maybe six.
You're speaking my language now. That sounds like something I could actually do.
It's good as well, because it's not just like 40 straight battles that you have to go through. Occasionally it throws like a little puzzle at you, but it's in the same type of environment.
Gotcha.
And they're not particularly difficult. In fact, my only criticism of the game really is it's too easy.
Oh, okay. Well, very different from too easy. My next one is actually incredibly hard. It's for the Sega CD, which longtime listeners will know is like kind of my baby system. Has my favorite game on it, Snatcher, has probably my favorite RPG on there in Lunar, neither of which are particularly obscure. Well, Snatcher here is in the States, but anyway, it's a game that Working Designs came out with here in the States called Potful Mail. I believe it was also released overseas on the TurboGrafx-16 and I think even the Super Famicom. It's an RPG, but it's also a platformer, and it's kind of hard to pigeonhole like exactly what it is, because you do get weapon upgrades, you do get upgrades to your statistics, and so on and so forth. But as you progress through the game, you unlock various other characters that have their own unique abilities. You play as the main character named Popful, who is this like elf warrior slash bounty hunter who's trying to get all these bounties, and it's got these beautiful cutscenes that are full anime cutscenes that explain the story to you. And as you go, like I said, you unlock the next character you unlock is a guy, I believe his name is Watt, and he's a magician, and he complements Popful's abilities kind of like in Castlevania 3, where you can switch at any time, like by pressing the select button or equivalent, you can switch between those. And then much later you'll find another character named Gaw, who is like this little fat blue thing with wings. I think it's meant to be a baby dragon or something, but it looks more like a jelly bean with a mouth and wings. Pretty scary looking fat thing, but it can breathe fire and fly for short periods of time, if I remember correctly. But the game is wicked hard. It's very much in the vein of, as we were talking about earlier, games where they made it incredibly hard over here in the States to prevent you from being able to beat it over a weekend. I've been told that the Japan versions of it are infinitely easier. I've gone back and played it relatively recently and wasn't able to clear the first boss after about an hour of trying. I was like, you know what? I was just better at video games as a kid. That's okay, you know, because I did manage to get pretty far as a kid. But as an adult, I don't know, these old hands or whatever it is, I just can't do it. I don't have that reaction time. But if you are relatively young, or maybe if you didn't wreck your hands doing manual labor for 20 plus years like I have, maybe this is a game for you. And it's certainly really, really funny and full of pop culture references, as are many of the Working Designs translations. And the voice actors they got for the game were really stellar. They always got like top of the line people to do these voices and stuff. And even if you do nothing else, if you just go on YouTube, you can like watch all the cutscenes together and maybe see a little bit of the gameplay. And unfortunately, the only thing you can play it on here is on the Sega CD. So if you don't have one, I would recommend emulating this thing. The Sega CD itself is up to like $200 these days, which is ludicrous to me. And then this particular game, I believe, is like $350+ at this point. It's really climbing in value. But a great game nonetheless, and if you do have the means to give it a chance. That gets us back around, unless anyone want to say something about Pop for Mail. I'm going to assume no one played it, because...
Yeah, I never played it.
Yeah, I was pretty much like, hey, ain't nobody ever played this shit.
I never had a Sega, so that was just denied to me.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Sega had a lot of great stuff for it, man. Like, a lot of people give it shit not having, you know, really great RPGs, but I would say that the Phantasy Stars are, you know, equivalent or close to of on par with, like, the Final Fantasies along with Shining Force. Are the top of the line stuff, and then it's got a lot of obscure stuff like Forever Kingdom and Shadowrun, you know, Exile as an example I gave earlier, just like some really weird stuff most people haven't heard of that are all fine games. And really, if you're a fan of the 16-bit era, especially the 32-16-bit era, it's got some great stuff. And then Saturn, of course, has some of the all-time best RPGs ever, in my opinion. And unfortunately, they're locked behind the paywall that is the Saturn these days, because even shitty games, like you could buy a sports game for the Saturn, it's going to cost you $20 these days, or more, unfortunately. So, yeah, if you got another one, I'd love to hear it, Tank.
All right, this one is kind of like a RPG with horror elements.
I'm on board.
It's called Codelca.
But still, my heart, I love Codelca, man. I love it. But go ahead.
And what actually got me into the series, well, into this game, was I played the Shadow Hearts series.
Mm-hmm.
And it brought me to Codelca. And I was like, oh, it's part of Shadow Hearts. I gotta play it.
No doubt. Yeah, it was the OG, and it went way under the radar when it came out on the PS1. Like, I'd never heard of it. I exactly like you. I played Shadow Hearts, which is a great game for the PS2 that takes place in, like, 1910s or the teens or something, like a very weird time period for an RPG to be set in. And Codelca,
but it worked for this game.
Oh, for sure. Codelca took place in like the late 1800s or something, right?
Yeah.
And it opens up with like this girl or a guy, I can't remember which one you start as, but they're climbing into this mansion.
You play as the girl first, Codelca first.
Yeah. Okay, and she like goes to this mansion, and there's already like a grappling hook that's on the side of the wall, and she's like, oh, that's weird. And she climbs up it, and she immediately gets attacked by like a zombie, and there's this guy with a gun that's like dying, and she saves his life because she has some amount of magical powers and is able to like heal people psychically and heals him.
Yeah.
And then it starts this adventure that plays a lot like a Resident Evil in the backdrops that you see. They've got those what do they call those pre-rendered or whatever
background,
and they're beautiful for the time. They really look good. And then you enter these battles a la like Final Fantasy, except they're a lot darker. It's just like a black screen with the enemies on it, and it's grid based. You walk towards the enemies, I believe, and then interact with them.
I would say the battle was, that was the one thing I didn't like about the game, the battle.
It's a little weak. You get used to it, and certainly
doesn't have the judgment ring.
No, it does not. No, it plays a lot more like Final Fantasy. No judgment rings in this one. In fact, like the equipment and items that you get, there are some items that are, again, just like a Resident Evil, you'll see on the overworld where they kind of like glow and your character will turn toward them. You can pick those up. But most of the items that you get will drop from enemies as you fight them, and they're completely random. And I've read about people going through the whole game without having any armor whatsoever. They just never get armor, you know, and you can do that in this game.
Which and is, I'd say one thing is, like, the battle system is slow-paced.
It is. And very weird. You have different weaponry that you use, and as you use it, you become better with it, right? You using a gun, and if you keep using a gun, eventually you'll shoot like two shots a round instead of one, and then you'll shoot three and four shots. Or if you keep using a hammer, you'll get better and better with a hammer and do like better and bigger abilities with that hammer. But the problem is, like, using any one type of weapon is difficult because they only have, like, you don't know when it's going to break. They have a certain amount of durability, and every time you use it, there's a, like, a random modifier that will decide whether or not that takes any damage, and after a while, that item will break, and you might not find another hammer. You might not find another gun, or you might not have bullets for that gun, or whatever. So it makes it hard to...
It's one of those games to where it's better to be acquainted with every weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very difficult to just go into one. I really tried on my last playthrough. I was like, oh, I got these baller hammers or whatever it was. I don't even remember. And I was like, I'm just going to use these. And I got to where I was like doing like heavy damage and swinging like two or three swings. But then I ran out of hammers or whatever, and I just didn't find another one. And it was like, okay, so I guess I'm not, you know, doing hammer time anymore. And had to switch it up. But it's got a neat story. The voice acting is fucking terrible. it's like they just got whoever was in the studio, you know, they're like, hey, PA number three, you know, go get me coffee and also voice this integral character to this story. And he's like, okay, sir. And yeah, I mean, it's bad. You ultimately end up with three characters. You meet up with a priest later on in the game who joins you.
Yeah, you do. And then you got the... You know, I say that, like, you meet up with this one guy, and he has the best name in all of the series. I don't know. His name is Roger Bacon.
Yeah, he's based off the real-life alchemist Roger Bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's...
So, it's like, I always love that name. Is every time I see him, I was like, there go Roger Bacon.
Yeah, and he's in the later Shadow Hearts games as well, I believe.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, trying to turn...
He's an enemy for two games, and then apparently he's like a good guy by the third game. He's just like, yeah, I did some shit, but, you know, I came around.
Third game on that series, though, that was when they went off the deep end. Someone else took over. I mean, it's still a good game, but it doesn't...
It's hold like up someone, with... someone saw Pocahontas and thought, what if we made them even more sexier and magical?
More or less. But yeah, Codelka, if nothing else, look it up for the music. It's got some of the absolute... It's like top three OSTs of all time for me. It's got some of the best music I've ever heard in the video.
Oh, I love the battle music. The battle music is like the one thing I do remember.
Man, there's this one piece in there that's chilling. I've used it for the show in the past and had people write me and say, what was that music from? I was like, man, that's from Codelka. You don't know about Codelka? And I mean, it's just like this sad, like somber piano tune with like violins and stuff coming in, and it is just stellar. Some of the best music I've ever heard, and it's true of the whole series. The Shadow Heart series is incredible, and if you haven't played those, do yourself a favor. Those are amazing. I mean, mixing horror, which is one of my favorite genres anyway, with RPG, which is my favorite genre, is just like, yeah, this is 100% my shit. And if it sounds like something you'd be into, definitely check that out. That's an excellent, excellent choice. It only didn't make my list, Tank. Like, it was going to be on mine, but I did it for the show about maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, people are just going to be like, you know, Blaine doesn't know but X amount of games or whatever. And he's just you know, I was trying to get stuff I hadn't talked about a whole lot, you know.
And that's like one thing I loved about the Shadow Hearts, like it mixed... You know, it also mixed the horror and everything, but you also ran into real historical beings. Like in the second Shadow Hearts, you actually had Anastasia in your party.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. Like, I kept thinking Nikola Tesla was in one of them too, but that may be something else. It's been a while since I played these guys. But yeah, they take place in actual United States, and they go to settings that you would know, you know, like Chicago or New York or whatever like that would be in within this world. So it's not like a mythical place where you're having to learn these new names of, you know, some fantasy land that you're going to forget 10 minutes later. This takes place in, you know, in our plane of existence. So it's really neat. how they intersperse that within it. Okay, if he's still here, let's check back in Australia. James, you got another one?
I am still here, yes. And for my next trick, I'll choose Trapped. You know, PS2 game?
I know of this game, and I meant to buy it, and then you just couldn't find it anywhere. And I think this game's like a $200 game now.
Well, I'm spewing because I used to have a physical copy. But all my PS2 games, when I got a PS3 and PS4 was coming out, I just gave them to like the neighbor's kid. And I'm like,
classic
looking
mistake.
Back on it. Oh, it yeah. was too. And I'm like, I had some really rare ones that just bargain bin scrounging. But yeah, you play as an appropriately dressed apprentice or maid or something. I don't know. I remember, and you set traps and lure the enemies into traps, and
that's
exactly
game.
Like the title.
And
they get trapped.
Very bloody, isn't it? Or maybe your version wasn't so much.
No, I don't think that. No, too obscure to have been edited in Australia.
Oh, okay.
They'd get speared and they'd be put in all these torture devices and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, progress through the game, you unlock more of these things, and I think there's like an alligator at one point.
Yeah,
that sounds like my type of game.
Yeah, I think it plays a bit like Tecmo Deception, except much better graphically.
Well, I'm pretty sure they made a unofficial sequel. It might be an official sequel, Deception for the Nightmare Princess.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before, actually, I think. Is that all part of the same series?
I'm not too sure. I know there's DLC for Deception 4 where you can actually get the character from Trapped.
Oh, okay, so they probably are.
Probably. I don't know.
All right, okay.
I haven't gotten very far in Deception at all, so...
Right. The whole shtick of it is, though, that, yeah, you're, like, trying to protect yourself from some form of invasion, and you make and set all these different traps, and then the enemies set them off. It's it in a nutshell. And
something like... Yeah, you're in a room, there are enemies, you set traps, and you lure them into the traps. It's your bare bones of it.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like Night Trap, starring Corey Haim for the Sega CD. Check that out. No, don't actually. It's a terrible game, but it's hilarious. It has a... What's it got? Arlie Emery or whatever? Help me out, Mike. You know the guy. The sergeant from...
From Full Metal Jacket?
Yes, yes.
Arlie Emery.
He's also in it.
But is he as appropriately dressed as the main character of this one?
I don't even want to picture what you're trying to put in my head, sir.
It's not
overly... He's not dressed as a sergeant. He's not appropriate.
Yeah. It's not overly bad, but it's just absurd, really, because it's like some form of half-shirt-looking thing with the half... It's like, what?
In Double Switch, he's... I said Night Trap earlier, didn't I? I meant Double Switch. In Double Switch, he is wearing a janitor's outfit because he plays a janitor. And the reason I got the two mixed up is, one, we're talking about a game called Trapped, and two, Double Switch is the sequel to Night Trap, which we were talking about earlier. So it's actually the second game in the series starring Dana Plato, except the main character is played by Corey Haim, the late, great one half of the Feldman-Haim duo from the 80s. It's a really weird title. I'd recommend checking that out. I mean, it's not an RPG, but if you want obscure, there you fucking go. Yeah, so Trapped for the PS2, and like I said, I think that game is just worth infinite money now, and I never see it, like, ever. It's, you know, I see obscure PS2 games every now and again, like sometimes once a year or so, I'll see a Rule of Rose or a Kuon or a Haunting Ground or something like that, but I've never seen Trapped since the day it came out when I saw it at GameStop and I had it in my hot little hand to buy and I talked myself out of it. I haven't seen it again, so it's a pretty rare one. Yeah. What might have been, yeah, your neighbor sold it some time ago and bought some whatever else he's buying.
It was the neighbor's kid, so he probably broke it or something.
Yeah.
traded or sold it to buy his first car.
Yeah, bought a didgeridoo with the proceeds.
How much has it been worth?
I want to say 200
bucks. New ground harness. But,
yeah. Anywho's it, we're back around to Mike. If he's got one more, we'll probably end with this round, I think, unless you guys want to go another.
I mean, I have a lot more, but that's kind of cheating.
No, it's fine. If Mike, have you got another one? And then we can go into maybe like a Versnick super dump where you can just top out a whole bunch if you'd like. That'd be all right.
I think I had one. I had one more really on my list.
Okay,
we
cool.
We do three each?
Yeah, 3-4 each. I just wanted to get to like the hour and a half, 2 hour mark, and that's usually we're pretty low key on this podcast. So we've got Mike and Bill on this round, and then if we want to try another round, we can. We'll talk about it. But anyway, Mike is up, so you got another one, bud?
Yeah, my final submission is the Atelier Iris series for PlayStation 2.
Okay.
It is made by Gust. It was the first of its kind that I had seen for the PlayStation 2, where you play not as like the strongest teenager on the friggin' planet, as most RPGs are. You are just some wimpy little alchemist who, you know, he makes up for his lack of physical strength by being able to manipulate the forces of mana, which is just things around the world like wood mana, grass, rocks, fire, water. And by using those, you can make spells, concoctions, and also imbue your allies with these elements to fight off much stronger creatures. And you can also manipulate the world around you as you gain more more mana elements in your repertoire. You can, I think you can freeze water, or you can like manifest wood to create a footstool to get over small barriers. So it's basically you get to play like a really neat alchemist wizard type person. And you have to rely on other stronger people to do the fighting for you as you support them. So it's really neat in that you're kind of like the strongest person while also being like the glass cannon in the party.
Right on. Yeah, it's a series that I own, I think, at least half of the ones released and have never actually played. I've got a bunch of these, especially... It's a series still going on, I think, because I want to say I've got them for PS4.
Yeah,
and
I think the only one I've played was Memoru. I think it was on PlayStation 3.
Okay.
Memoru. Yeah.
I know I've got a few of them, and I think I put one in to start playing one day, and was like, "What the heck is this?" And put it back. I don't remember which one that was. So, but it's one of those things. It's like, you know, there's so many games nowadays. Used to when we were kids, like. Anytime something new came out RPG wise, like you were on it like a hungry dog, and now there's so much for so many different systems. You know, it's like I said, if the apocalypse happened tomorrow, and it kind of feels like it might, I'd be able to play games till the day I died and not have to play the same one twice. So,
sorry, the apocalypse happened in March, just so you know.
Yeah, I don't want to get too political because I had a bad review over commenting on Black Lives Matter a few podcasts ago.
No.
Yeah, I had a one-star...
Somebody thought they didn't matter?
Jesus, man.
I had a one-star review, something about it was white-funded, something, and I was just like, man, I wish I knew who the hell you were so I could punch you in the face. But but he said, used to be good, we'll never listen to again. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me, man? What? It's whatever, you know? You can't please everybody.
I thought he was a good video game reviewer until I found out he liked black people.
I know, right? Like,
freaking traitor.
The whole thing. It's like, what's that one comic? He said, you know, people are angry about the whole thing. And it's not like we're saying they matter more. We're just saying they matter. They just... Anyway, it's like, how is that a controversial stance? You know what I mean?
Only if you're a fragile little bitch.
Basically.
I think the comment might have been just been trolling you.
I don't know. I just...
I'd like to believe people aren't that dull.
But they are. But they are. It's like I said.
I believe.
And yeah, so if you're listening and you hear this and you have the means to, please go over to the RPG show and give me a better review just to offset that asshole. That'd be great, because Derek and Dawn on their latest episode, they gave me shit about it. I didn't even know. I don't ever check that shit, but they were like, Blaine, you gave us a one-star review, and they were, you know, shitting on me a little bit, and I'm like, man, it wasn't me, it was some dick, you know. But whatever. Anyway.
Can I just give a quick fuck you to that guy?
I know, right?
1 stars are not cool, because it does drop the rating of things.
I mean,
makes things harder to find.
We've got like 117 ratings right now, but 1-star reviews do drop it, and right now we're sitting at a 4.0. We used to be 4.5, so I guess enough people hit it. He was the only one that left an actual review. But we had this last couple months, we've had like 10 reviews or more, some of which were negative. And I can only imagine it's because I went a little bit political on that episode. But I just that day, if I remember right, I just that day almost got in a fist fight with an old man over Black Lives Matter. And it was just in my head and I was just talking about it. And this guy's literally threatening to physically violence against me. And my 6-year-old daughter was with me. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding? And not only that, I would have destroyed this man. I mean,
aren't you like jacked?
I'm a little big. Yeah, I've been working out quite a bit. And he's like 50. I'm 6'5", you know, 220-something pounds. And I work out all the time. And he's like 5'6", in his 50s, you know, just all gray hair and shit. And he's wanting to fight. And, you know, it's all you can do sometimes. Like, do I really want to go to jail over this shit? You know, but...
I always get ruffled when people say, like, oh, don't get political. And I'm like, human rights are not political.
Right? That's like, just it.
Deciding how much taxes you're going to have in your district is political. Deciding your parking district, your school districts, that's political.
Right.
Human rights, kind of a given. Like,
it should
basic
be.
Human rights and dignity.
It should be, but anyway, you know, I don't want to get into all that bullshit. We already have said too much. Everybody knows my stance and Mike's stance because we're kind of loud about it on our social media platforms. I'm just tired of the world. That's why I want to talk about RPGs, y'all. But anyway, I got into it. I'm sorry for pushing us that direction. I'm sorry, listeners, any of you who are idiots. I'm sorry that you're stupid.
RPGs meta.
Oh man. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, Bill, let's get your last one in before we start.
So,
yeah.
That note. let's go for Ghost Lion, shall we?
Oh my God, Ghost Lion! Why didn't I think of that one?
So first of all, it's got possibly two of the greatest cover arts ever. The Japanese one's great. It's like full on anime, and then the American one has a lady in spandex with a great giant white lion sitting next to her.
Ghost Lion, right?
Ghost Lion. It is the weirdest cover.
You need
cover.
To Google the American version is just bonkers.
I'm looking up the cover right now. It looks awesome.
Oh my God! I typed in Ghost Lion and all I'm getting is pregnancy tests. What the fuck?
I'm pretty sure.
I'm getting a bunch of movies, but.
Yeah, Ghost Lion NES. It is the goofiest
NES.
Cover. It's straight out of like VH1's greatest hits. The girl's wearing spandex. They're like pink. She's got like the off-the-shoulder halter top, sitting next to a lion.
Oh my God, this is like an aerobicized video.
Exactly, but yeah. It's nothing like
that. The thing that makes it completely bonkers is that the main character, who that lady is portraying, is an 8-year-old girl.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
And she's
sense.
Next to Kimba the White Lion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it goes lion, not line.
Yeah, lion.
Oh, sorry.
L-I-O.
Oh, that's why I got the pregnancy tests. I was typing in ghost line.
Same.
Sorry, yeah, I'm from a region of England called Essex, and I have a terrible accent.
No, you're fine.
No one can ever hear the last bit of the word I say.
But, yeah, have you played the game, though?
Oh, yeah.
I've never played it.
I'm like 3/4 of the way through it. It's brilliant, to be honest with you.
It's actually a really good game.
Yeah, it very much uses the Dragon Warrior mechanics.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You don't level up and you don't get EXP. You pick up fragments of hope, which then sort of give you extra life and mana. And you find sort of warriors and stuff along the way who you summon in battles to help you out.
Yeah, through life.
So you go into a battle and you're just this 8-year-old girl Maria who generally will get destroyed by most things. And then you have to use up your like mana points to summon these people in to help you. And one of them's a giant slug, and the giant slug's great. He just mullers everything.
Yeah. He's not on the cover. All I see is Dungeons and Dragons.
But have a look at the Japanese cover as well, because I really like that.
Yeah, it's got Moses. Yeah, Moses is on the cover with lightning coming out of his hands, with Lunar yep. holding her sword. And it's like... this 8-year-old girl who's quite developed. This looks like an off-brand Voltron from the Japanese cover. I'm looking at some of the commands here. What is Vigor? How is Vigor a command?
That's one of the people that you summon. That's the black guy on the cover.
Oh, so command is speak, goods, look, vigor, and those are your allies?
Oh, no.
Who's good?
Vigor? I'm not sure, actually. Vigor, I think, might just be a stat.
I don't know.
Well, that's a command. I'm looking at the same screen here. Speak, goods, command, and like the crown is my treasure, blah, blah, blah. But it's in your command window.
Not sure.
Yeah, it's been
I'm digging the Japanese art than the American art.
I mean, this looks like a Dragon Warrior clone. I'm already down for that aesthetic right off the bat.
It's actually good.
Did you ever play the Super Mario Dragon Warrior hack?
No. I've got it.
No, the guy swapped out like slimes with Goombas, Drakis with Koopas.
Yeah. I've got it.
It was pretty cool.
I've got a ROM of it for my Dreamcast, but I haven't played it. But
yeah, Ghost Line is definitely a Dragon Warrior clone, but it was made like really late in the NES life cycle.
It was like 92.
And it's really good quality game, really really good. I was so surprised. I literally thought it was going to be trash when someone asked me to play it. I was like, hey, this is actually really fun.
Yeah,
really enjoying this game.
I tried for years to get Brent and Nick to play it. They kept looking for like, you know, obscure weird games, and for a long time I would suggest that and it would be on their list, but they never chose it as one of them. That and the Fairy Tale Adventure, which is a terrible game for the Genesis, which you should never play. I actually sent them physical copies of that one, and they still did not choose that, which upset me greatly. But I wasn't out too much, like $16, so no big deal. But yeah, Ghost Lion Man, it's one of the best RPGs for the Nintendo, just period. It's top five, and no one ever talks about it.
Interestingly, it came out on the 1st of October 1992, which is when Dragon Warrior 4 came out.
Right. Yeah, and Dragon Warrior 4 is the best RPG for the NES. I'll argue that till the day I die. Then probably Final Fantasy, then very maybe Ghost Lion. Ghost Lion is an excellent fucking game. It's got a good storyline. It's got neat mechanics. The only thing that really is working against it is that fucking cover. You see that, and you think you're going to be playing some game where you're doing dance aerobics or, you know, something silly ass. It doesn't look at all like it'd ever be an RPG, and I don't know who is in charge.
When are we going to get physical?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it looks...
You ready to jazzercise?
That cover would be great on... There's a game called... I think it's called Dance Aerobics for the NES that was for the Power Pad. That would be perfect for that game, you know. almost anything would have been better for Ghost Lion's cover.
And this is like if the group Asia did their own video game like Aerosmith did.
Yeah, except good. Yeah, Aerosmith.
But this looking at these two covers puts me in the mind of the NES Mega Man covers.
Right? And have you read the original NES? Like the whole reason the original Mega Man cover was so bad was they sent the artist just the vaguest description of what he was supposed to be drawing, and then showed him in-game footage, like a single still of Mega Man shooting his gun. And so, and of course, the guy assumed that it was some guy holding a gun. And it was in, like, Cutsman's world, so he saw all that stuff in the background. He's like, okay, so it's some weird-looking guy with a gun. So he just did the best he could, and that first cover is... Again, I've got a box copy of that complete behind me too. Just goofy as all hell. And then here in the States, I think overseas they did a lot better with the Rockman titles, but here in the States, one of them they got like Mega Man the wrong color. He's like purple or something, or red. I think that was Mega Man 6.
Or like Captain N, where he's green.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and he's kind of green, depending on the, like, when I was a kid, that didn't bother me, because on the screen I played on, he was green. It wasn't.
You had a broken TV.
No, it depends on how your settings are. Like, he's kind of a teal color anyway. Like, it just depends on how far your tint is one way or the other. And yeah, he just always looked kind of more green than blue to me. So, like, when I saw him on Captain N, I was like, yeah, that's right.
That was a weird Mega Man on that series.
Oh man, that whole
show. But
that's
part of my childhood.
Oh, me too, man. I've got the DVD box set of that shit, and it does not hold up. It does not hold up.
I have the DVDs of the Legend of Zelda cartoon.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I've got a few of those too, and Mario Brothers Super Show.
Link is very rapey in those.
Oh yeah. Excuse me.
It's like someone just decided, let's do Link, but who is he going to sound like? How about he just rips off Steve Martin lines?
Why not? You go back in time and you watch, as an adult, watch Captain N and look at King Hippo and hear some of that innuendo that is in there that they put between Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo. King Hippo standing there with porn star nipples. I mean, they gotta be 2 inches long, and just who would draw him like that? First of all, that's just creepy as all fuck. And then the banter between Eggplant Wizard, some of that stuff is downright dirty, you know. Just rewatch it, that's all I'll say. I don't know of any specific example off the top of my head, but I know
he's an eggplant for a start.
Well, sure, but every couple episodes there was one that was like a back and forth between King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard where my jaw was on the floor. I was like, this was on 80s TV, because it was like, oh, but it won't fit. And he's like, well, just push a little harder. It's like, oh, you know, it's too big. And then you just feel like you're like going, what? And like, if you weren't watching what was going on screen, you would think you were watching some really weird gay porn.
Oh, it's no use. I'll never fit into this pipe.
Nonsense. All you need is a little lubrication. Lettuce is green, tomatoes are red. Turn King Hippo into a salad head.
Hey, this ain't lubrication.
Into the pipe without any toil. Abracadabra, vinegar and oil.
Toss your salad. Vegetable!
Turn the volume down so the neighbors don't think you're watching something weird.
Man, now I gotta try and find that clip and put it right there, because I'm gonna sound real weird. But anyway, I probably won't.
Mother Brain's like, someone put blinders on my tank. I can't stand this.
And what's up with that too? Is they got the weirdest?
I don't have eyelids.
The guy that voiced Mother Brain was an old 50s.
Aubrey too.
Old 50s doo-wop singer, yeah, turned voice actor that did Aubrey too, and I mean, sounded every bit of Little Richard, and just was the weirdest. Yeah, everybody. Mega Man sounded like he smoked like 10 packs of cigarettes a day. They made Simon Belmont a fop. I mean, everything about that whole series, just like, but why? You know, they introduced Game Boy at some point as a character. Game Boy was just a guy.
They visited the world of Tetris with cars that have square wheels.
Yeah.
And then, I would say my favorite episode will always be the Legend of Zelda crossover.
For sure. Yeah, Legend of Zelda, the Dragon Warrior one, the Fox Onadu one stands out. Bayou Billy, for some reason. I remember that one.
Yeah, mine that stood out was where Mother Brain like basically threw in the towel and gave up and like sent everyone back to their own worlds, but it was a trap.
I don't remember that one. Huh. I'll have to read
it. Yeah, Mega Man was floating through Mega World, and he's, like, having a parade. And,
I remember
that.
And
all of a sudden, like, the people in the crowd start attacking him, and he's just like, oh, no.
Oh,
this,
God.
This is not Mega Awesome.
Yeah, and Kid Icarus, for some reason, is like a little kid that says Ithacus after everything. You just want to punch him. But, yeah, that's our childhood, so... Younger listeners, don't go back and watch that shit. That was who greenlit this shit, you know, between it and the Mario Brothers Super Show. That one actually had some decent stuff about it. At least you got to see some, like, pro wrestlers and Cyndi Lauper.
You get to see like the sitcom stars of the 70s showing up.
Basically.
Yes.
Yeah, friend.
And the Super Mario rap.
Yeah, for sure. With Captain Lou Albano. The brothers. My daughter loved that series up till she was about two or three. She would watch it, and it was a real nostalgia hit. You know, you saw these characters. Nicole Edgert was a guest on there, and of course, all these different wrestlers. Cyndi Lauper,
the Ghostbusters.
They had everybody, man. If they were somewhat popular of the era, they were on that show. It was really weird. It's a really weird show and really weird casting too, to choose a couple of guys that were pushing 60 to play Mario and Luigi. Just some weird stuff was done in the 80s, guys. 80s and 90s. Man, now I want to watch some of that. Oh well. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for the show. I want to thank everyone that that came on, Tank and James, Mike, Bill. Thank you so much, especially Tank, Mike, and Bill. You've never been on the show before, and to fill in was really great. We'd love to have any one of you on again. I think this was a pretty cool show. We talked about some obscure-ass shit. Is any of you guys want to plug anything in particular? Mike, I know you for sure do, and Bill, I think you might as well. Mike? Think we
sure.
Are.
But just yeah, the Graveyard Shift horror podcast. You can find that anywhere. It's there's a lot of. Just be careful not to get the Graveyard Shift, which is an evangelical
right?
podcast. I don't know why. I mean, if you try looking for it, you might find that and be like, when is he going to talk about horror movies? When is he going to shut up about Jesus? That's not me. It the artwork you want to look for is a tombstone with two skulls on it.
Right, and there's actually like three or four Graveyard Shift.
Yeah.
It's real weird. That became like a super popular name after you guys. I don't know what happened, but I looked you up recently, and I want to say on iTunes there are two separate feeds of your show, and I was like, well, what's going on? One of them has completely different dates, so I'm thinking maybe someone re-uploaded all your old shows onto a new feed or something. Meant to talk to you about that.
I have a stalker fan? Weird.
Maybe. I don't know. It was real weird.
Well, anyway, check that out and see if you can find, like, up to current episodes. Because if it stops short for some reason, then you found the wrong feed somehow.
Yeah.
We're still going. I did used to do a podcast called Playing with Power where every month or so we tried to read old Nintendo Power magazines, each issue, first to last, front to back. But Nintendo kind of cracked down on all the places that did have archives. So my archives only went up to like issue 120 something, and I ran out of hosts long before then. So I'm going to try to revive that. Maybe if it's possible, if anybody can supply scans of Nintendo Power complete, send them to me. Like, I'll do what I can to get the show back. But the only current podcast I do is The Graveyard Shift. It's a weekly horror movie podcast. We do various themes, like deleted scenes as skits or just cold opens where we're in the world of the movie. Like when we did Bird Box, I did an episode where I'm like trying to... like if you ever heard the Bird Box challenge where people are trying to drive using the collision sensors on their car?
Yeah, it's
like they did in the movie?
Yeah.
So my version of the Bird Box challenge was me driving around without my glasses.
Yeah, which is also dumb.
And, well, it ended as it should have.
Right.
And so this, right now we're doing the Summer of Sand, where we're doing sand-based horrors. And we've done Blood Beach from 1980, which is awful. Then we did The Sand, which is a 2015 movie, surprisingly good. And then we went to the Brooke Hogan movie. Yep, a special appearance by Jamie Kennedy. And, you know, we take suggestions all the time. If anybody wants to guest on the show, just suggest a movie and we'll talk about it for an hour. We'll talk about the good, the bad, and anything else. It's always a fun time. We're just, whether even like the worst or the best, just, you know, suggest it and we'll do it.
Yeah, it's a great show. Yeah.
Is it a horror or a comedy?
Both.
We've done comedies with horror elements to it, like Mayhem, which was a movie from on Shudder, and that's taking the Glenn from The Walking Dead. And he's basically like if Office Space met 28 Days Later. And it is hilarious. He starts off in the basement and has to make it to the penthouse. It's like Office Space, 28 Days Later, and The Raid, all in one movie.
What was that one that you did where it was like it was a group of vampires and it was kind of like the real world and one of them was like the Nosferatu vampire?
Oh, What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, that was definitely a comedy.
Yeah, that was fucking hilarious. So, yeah. And even like when we did Haxan, a 1922 witchcraft documentary, a Swedish silent documentary. So,
yeah.
You know, if it's got horror elements,
they'll do
like, we'll watch it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, good stuff. Definitely check that out. And Bill, I know you're on a podcast currently, and we're formally, and if you just want to reiterate that, that'd be great.
Yeah, I know it's a bit confusing. So there's the RPG After Years is the current running show, right, which does kind of have the RPG Golden Years as part of its core being, basically. But yeah, the After Years is a show where we talk about all things RPG, sort of past, present, and future. The Golden Years part of it is we're going through all of me and one of the other hosts, Rich. There's four hosts on the show, but me and Rich are going through a big long list of 500 RPGs from the 16-bit era all the way to the end of the PS2 era. So that's why I'm playing lots of obscure games,
which was perfect for today's show.
Yeah, exactly. And then I've also got my new podcast, which is Bill's JRPG Adventures and Other Trappings, where I'm playing through and translated games that never made it to English countries,
right?
Basically English-speaking countries, so they've been fan-translated lovingly, which is where I played Monstania.
Right. Which sounds like something I definitely would be interested in. And, Tank, I didn't mean to leave you out. I don't know if you have anything that you wanted to plug or not. I guess I just assumed you didn't. Is there anything want to plug? I didn't think you did. But, and I know, James, unless you've started something relatively recently that you don't either. You did have a podcast. I don't know if you're still doing it, but you were talking about starting one. Has that got off the ground yet?
I did start it, but just getting the people in it organized is like herding cats.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
So it's a horrible show.
Ah, well, I don't know. I haven't heard it. But if you want to plug it, you're welcome to.
Nah, but I will plug Fuck That One Star Guy.
Right, Fuck That One Star Guy. You know, I don't remember his name. I remember it had Don in it, and I briefly, for a second, thought that Tank was trolling me because his old on-screen name was Don Corleone. I was like, maybe this guy's wanting to be on the show because it's that guy that gave me the one-star review, and I didn't... Either way, I was like, if he is, I kind of want to confront him, and if he's not, I you know, that's cool too. So I'm glad it turned out that you were just a normal good dude and not this asshole that we would. Oh man, if you had been that dude, me and Mike would have laid into you. Oh man.
Nah, I've been a fan of the show.
That's cool, man. Like, it's so weird because I know there's quite a few people that listen because Derek and Don were pretty popular back in the day, and I joined on their feed. And there's a lot of people that listen that just never contact me, and then like they'll contact me even recently, been like, "Yeah, I've been listening to you for 5 years." I'm like, "Well, why didn't you say something until now, man?" So I'm glad you reached out and got on the Discord. And if you want to join us on Discord, just look for the RPG Show podcast in your Google search bar there, and you can find a website that'll have links, permanent links to this Discord. And if you don't want to do that, you can find me on Facebook at Is It Worth Podcast, and send me a message there. I'll get you a link to join us in Discord. It's pretty happening scene. We've got 40 or 50 people that are in and out. Not all of them are active every day. Sometimes we'll be in there talking for literal hours about mostly RPGs, but all kinds of other bullshit too. You never know what you're going to get in there. A lot of great people that I consider actual friends at this point on there, so definitely join us there. And if you don't want to do that but still want to reach out, you can find me at RetroKel on Twitter, where I've really turned into more of a political bot, where I've just... So if you're very right-wing, you probably don't want to go visit me there, but you can reach me there, or you can just send me an email at simonbelmont@outlook.com. That's Simon, not Simon. I guess that's about it. So until then, next time, bye, everybody.
Bye, Mr. Blaine.
All right, everybody.
Bye, everybody.